Hello everyone, my name is James Baca, known professionally as the Notorious Banker, and welcome to my podcast. Tens of thousands strong following me on social media at Notorious Banker on TikTok, X, and Instagram, X formerly known as Twitter, and I am the author of the soon-to-be-published book Pretty Condo that will be available November 13th on Amazon in both ebook and paperback format. It is also available for digital download via yours truly by email for just $15, with all proceeds going to help benefit my grandmother's cost of living going forward. Guys, thank you so very much for your love and support. I really do appreciate it. And I want to get back to the topic of my new book coming out in a couple of weeks. As I mentioned, all the proceeds will be going to establish a bank account or a fund, if you will, for my grandmother. She has retirement pay. She's going to have Social Security benefits until the day she passes away. But there's little things, you know. Paying the electric bill, paying the water bill, that's part of life. That's just what we have to do. Cleaning up her yard, having the capability to buying landscaping materials to help fix up her yard, to make her stairs more safe to navigate whenever she climbs up the stairs of her mobile home. Making sure that any little thing that needs to be taken care of is taken care of. For instance, my mom actually laid down new carpet in my grandfather's old room this past month, and it looks like a whole new place now. It smells clean, it looks good. We actually purchased a king-size bed so we could have someone staying the night there to take care of grandma as well. I mean, this is something that is going on as we speak. And while I'm financially contributing as much as I can, of course, I am a hardworking individual who is trying to do things to help himself all the time. The Notorious Banker is a full-time job through and through. With this book project, though, since I wanted to talk about it so much, I figured, hey, there were a lot of life lessons to be learned. There was a lot of tips to be learned when we saw my grandfather pass away in July. And I'm still learning a lot from him going, you know, and helping people whose family members died at Bank of America for 13 years. Yes, you learn a lot of things can go wrong. You learn a lot of things that need to be done in order to get things done. But when you're sitting on the other side of that bank desk, you're kind of flying blind, and you have a lot of trust in people. And what I noticed during the 10-day process from the time he passed to the time we buried him was just there was a lot of conversations that I think would make the average person nervous even in good circumstances. And in bad circumstances, they're just 10 times worse. And when you're talking about money, when things had to get paid, when people threatened to not do certain things because things need to be paid, it gets frustrating, it gets scary, and what can I say? It opened up my eyes. It surely opened up my mom's eyes, because now that she's in her mid-60s and she, you know, her mom, my grandmother, is in her mid-80s, she knows that going through this process again is going to be an arduous one. And I don't want to sound grim, but you almost want my grandmother to live a little bit longer life, to have my mom live a little bit longer life. That way they can get prepared financially for their final wishes to be respected. And although that was the case for my grandfather, there was still about $1,000 out of pocket that needed to be taken care of with his funeral expenses. So that was an impact to them. You know, we did what we could. We're trying to do what we could. But with this book, and I'm pricing it at $15 for digital download, it's going to be about that price for the digital download via Amazon in the Kindle format. And then paperback is probably going to be somewhere in the $22 to $25 range. I strongly recommend doing digital download, and then worst case scenario, doing the ebook Kindle format, because that is where the most net revenue will be made for this book. Like my other books with Ryan Coogler and the unemployment stuff, I mean, I was happy to make a few bucks here and there. Don't get me wrong. It was nice. It was nice to get that money. But those were more labors of love. And not, don't get me wrong, this one is a labor of love too. But those ones needed to be told. And I had a format that I was able to tell them. And damn it, I did it. And this one is something that I can't see anyone else doing. So I'm able to, you know, publish this and say, hey, look, here's a story about what happened with me. I find it interesting, and this is why you should find it interesting. And I really, really hope that people take a look at it, contribute, and help me help my grandmother, help me help people in my family. by doing this project that I just absolutely, it was sad, but I enjoyed doing because I learned a lot about the processes, and that's only going to make me better in my travels, in my career. That's only going to make me stronger whenever these things have to be done down the road for other family members. And, you know, I got to tell you, it is one of those things where, all things being equal, if you're not learning life lessons from everything that happens around you, what are you really doing? So there's that. It's coming soon. I'm actually working on the final editing, and I'm going to create a book cover in the next couple days. I should have an announcement on my social media page very, 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 very soon. Today's podcast, we're going to break it up into two quick segments here. One, I've kind of flip-flopped on marijuana banking. Now, if you don't know what that is, I'll explain it to you in just a second here. But, you know, years ago, I was so anti-drug. I was so anti-marijuana. I'm even anti-drinking. I don't drink anymore. I had a sip of a margarita the other day, and I was literally just massive headache for 6 hours. It was ridiculous. And it shows me what a teetotaler I am now. But I never look down upon someone for having a good time. So if you want to smoke, if you want to drink, go right ahead and do it. It's, you know, don't go by me. This is just one of those things that I don't prefer doing, but if you want to do it, knock yourself out. The state of New Mexico has had hundreds of dispensaries open up in the last year and a half that marijuana has been legalized in this state for recreational use. And one of the big things I learned about in banking was that marijuana businesses are not able to do conventional retail or business banking the way that you and I do. So marijuana, you know, businesses are strictly a cash business through and through, with millions of dollars of actual cash, you know, changing hands every single day across this nation for transactions regarding marijuana. And because of the federal regulations governing opening accounts that are for businesses who are in the marijuana industry, these people cannot deposit it into a normal bank account. Now, don't get me wrong, working in the bank, I know that there's some people who are banking that are marijuana businesses, and that's totally on the retail banks for not doing their due diligence on these small businesses. You can really thank bankers who have sales goals for willfully being blind for that reason, but you're not supposed to be opening up an account. So, you know, a couple of years ago, and then especially last year whenever New Mexico opened up marijuana purchases for recreational use, I was for, hey, you know what, you know how you curtail money laundering? You allow these people to bank. You allow them to accept debit and credit cards. You allow them to deposit that cash into a checking or savings account. You allow them to use the Visa or MasterCard network to make purchases. You allow them to use online banking. Allow them to use all the other, you know, a la carte features that are with banking, because there's a lot of them, trust me. And I was really, really for that for the longest time, because I know just the simplicity of doing business is one thing, and then secondarily, just, you know, legitimizing your business. Because anytime I see a food truck that's cash only, I'm like, well, what are they trying to hide, you know? They just don't have a preferred method of accepting payments, and they just don't have, trust in the system, is what I'm looking at. They trust themselves with cash, and they don't trust a bank with a digital transaction for whatever that is. And I was just all for this for the longest time. And then I saw an interesting just blurb. It was a tweet, or an X post, if you will, by KVIA, the El Paso affiliate here, El Paso ABC affiliate, And they posted something about New Mexico cannabis businesses and their reluctance or total just disregard for paying taxes in the state, which is the ultimate conversation starter for someone who wants to legalize marijuana. It's like, oh, we could tax it and make a lot of money for the businesses. People aren't fucking paying their taxes, period, end of story, excuse my language. But they're not. They choose not to. And if you're a big enough business, you hire accountants and you don't pay those taxes anyway. So I always said that that was a bullshit lie. I always said that was stupid. It was ridiculous. Why do people say that? Just say, I want to get high. I want to be able to get high and buy it at the store. But no, you make it this big thing. And come to find out, over 100 cannabis businesses are not paying their taxes, leading to just mess in the state, and you know, tax evasion is possible, and there's going to be lawsuits, there's going to be a lot of things going on, and it's going to delegitimize a business that was just legalized a year ago. I've often said that I'm for these cannabis businesses, but I am not for the people who run them, because people who think that they know business get into this business and they just totally fail because these people can't run anything. You know, these are the type of people who, you know, if their kids come home with a box of that really crappy chocolate for $1 a bar to sell to fundraise for the school, they put it on the buy and sell pages of Facebook, for God's sakes, and say, "Hey, would you like to buy my kids candy?" That's not salesmanship. That's not doing business. That's not a smart way of doing business. That's telling me that you're lazy, and that's telling me that you don't know how this works. And I've only been to a couple of these cannabis businesses here in New Mexico, but if they're anything like a lot of the businesses over here, they are poorly run, and I could tell you that just from the bank perspective. And the fact that they're not paying their taxes, well, what can I say? It's made me flip-flop. It's made me believe that I don't think a lot of proprietors of cannabis businesses are ready for banking for their marijuana industry business. I just think that there's a lot of immaturity in the business, and maybe there's some sort of vetting system that's going to come with being able to open up an account for your marijuana business. But I flip-flopped. I was all in favor of these people getting the conveniences of banking. Can't believe I'm saying that. That phrase got me fired years ago. But I don't think they deserve it, because I don't think they even know the basic rules of operating a business and paying their taxes, to be honest with you. Because that's just another big lie that we were told by these people. Secondarily, I want to talk to you really quick about bank bonuses. They're back. You know, 20 years ago, you were able to open up a checking account pretty much anywhere, and get $100, get $150 for the pleasure of just doing business with a new bank. You know, Capital One was the last one that I did about 10 years ago, where they gave me $150 in times when they didn't have to do that to sign up for their Capital One account, and that is something that is now $350, and I had my wife open up an account. Banks want your money, banks want your deposits, and they're stopping at no end to get them. While some of the requirements may be high to get some bonuses, there are some advantageous ones out there, and I'm going to talk to you about them because I have a secret plan that I'm doing with opening up bank accounts for bonuses. And I'll give you a little bit of insight on that on the second segment as well, because I'm looking at these things and I see that there's a lot of money to be had. But just follow the rules and, you know, placate these banks by doing some business with them whenever you get these bonuses. That way it looks like you're not just seeking out all these, you know, incentives for opening up accounts, because banks do monitor that. And banks do watch that. I've taken trainings at Bank of America on that. So trust me when I say that you got to play ball in a certain way. And yes, there is money to be made by simply throwing your business to one financial institution. I'll give you a couple of ones that I'm looking at as well. This is going to be a fun podcast. We'll be right back right after this. Hey everyone, it's James Baca, known professionally as the Notorious Banker, inviting you to join me on TikTok. It's at Notorious Banker on TikTok. Join the over 22,000 followers in following me, this weird, nearly 40-year-old man, in discussing problems going on with big banks, problems going on with customer service in this crazy world, in a funny, acerbic way that no one else can match. I've had the fortune of having nearly 600,000 likes of my content since I started on TikTok last year, and it just keeps on growing. My followers keep on growing. Nick Jonas of the Jonas Brothers follows me on TikTok, which I just find weird because although I like the Jonas Brothers music, I have never interacted with the man once in my life. Yet I am one of 40 accounts that he follows. That just goes to show you the uniqueness of my content, and I'm proud to say that my content is unique. We hit up big banks. We hit up businesses that have poor customer service. No, we don't show Karen videos, okay, because that's going too far. But we talk about things in an enlightened manner, a funny manner, and we have a good time doing that. So once again, at Notorious Banker on TikTok, join me on the social media network that everyone seems to be talking about. I promise you one thing, you'll always have an interesting video to watch when you follow me, the Notorious Banker, on TikTok. Thank you. All right, everyone, I'm back with more Notorious Banker podcast. As you hear the cars drive by my window here in Las Cruces, New Mexico. I actually just played back what I just recorded, and you can't really hear the cars driving by. This microphone is damn good, I tell you what. So unless someone is honking their horn or something, you're not going to hear it. Well, it's the first real fall day here in Las Cruces, and it's nice to have the window open while I do a podcast. 7 months out of the year, I cannot do that. Fresh air is coming in. I'm not profusely sweating as I recorded this, and that's one of the reasons why I don't do YouTube podcasts as well. Anyway, let's talk about marijuana banking. Now, one of the things they teach you about in banking is there's certain businesses that are, you know, restricted businesses that you can't open up bank accounts with whenever you're a banker. You know, gambling type of accounts, so like for a casino, for instance. At Bank of America, you can't open up an account for a politician without approval. So James Baca for mayor account, you cannot open up until you get this permission from some weird office within Bank of America. I tried to help someone who was running for, I believe it was Congress. Yeah, it was for the House of Representatives one of the last years that I was there. And it took 2 weeks, and those people were so rude, and I had to open it up in such a certain way, and the man wanted titling a certain way, and it was against rules. And then the person with Bank of America was saying, well, you either open it this way or stop calling us. And I was like, okay, well, what a way to talk to a coworker or a teammate or whatever. So I told the guy that this is how I had to open it, and he wanted to open it, and we did. One of the other restricted businesses that you cannot open up an account for are marijuana businesses, or a company that has marijuana holdings, if you will. Now, you know, this is something that goes back almost 100 years. Of course, the federal government lists marijuana as one of the top tier narcotics, you know, along with crack cocaine and meth and whatnot, which is weird, and it's not right. You know, 90 years ago, 100 years ago, yeah, you could have looked at it a lot differently. But it's so mainstream now, you know, people joke about it openly in public now, and it is what it is. I was never one to partake in those type of things. I had a stepdad who actually sold it, you know, illegally for the longest time, and it wasn't, you know, little nickel bags on the street. This was a high-end operation that he was a part of. And, you know, we reaped the benefits as young kids with the amount of money that was flowing into our house. We had the nicest things and whatnot. So, you know, it's not a pot calling kettle black situation here. I see the positives of it, but I also see the negatives of it as well. And I think anyone who's lived that type of life will understand what I'm saying when I say, hey, I'm conflicted about it because it made us less poor, but there were some just kind of seedier things, no pun intended, about having a marijuana business operating out of our house 25 years ago. But, you know, Colorado, Washington State legalized it not too long ago, and then slowly but surely California, Arizona, all these other states started legalizing it. And it became a bigger issue because millions of people were going to these stores, Nevada, by the way, too. Dispensaries near the strip, there's that Planet 13 one that is insane, multi-million dollar establishment, which is just, it's the Walmart of marijuana, and I can't believe how nice it is. You see all these things and you go, wow, this is a new day. When New Mexico finally did it a couple of years ago, you know, it was met with applause, and I was even applauding too, because it was just time to move on from the stigma, you know, and it was time to make money, or, you know, so the state of New Mexico said, so we thought, because as I mentioned in the opening, one of the things that marijuana purveyors and consumers will always say is, man, you should legalize it, just tax it, and you can help fund the schools, and you can help pave the roads, or whatever. And I used to just laugh at those people. I was like, what the fuck do you know about taxes? What do you know about schools and building roads and all? You don't know anything. You're just trying to win me over on your side by like some of the laziest arguments in the world. If a politician made an argument that lazy, they wouldn't even get 20% of the vote. But we allow our friends and family to talk like this and make it, you know, and cosplay that they're actually smart about it when they're not. they're ridiculously idiotic with it. So you don't have to convince me that way. I came around on my own and said, you know what, this is probably going to be a good thing for this town, because if anything, you know, any taxes that will come from the sale of it is one thing. And then you have people actually opening up storefronts, which was almost not going to be a thing after COVID. So in this town, Las Cruces, New Mexico, man, I would say there's at least 30 dispensaries. And while some of them, including some of the bigger ones, are no longer open, even just after 1 year, at least there's people still dreaming. At least there's people still thinking about what they can do in this field. But one of the things that is part of being in the marijuana industry is you cannot bank. You cannot bank conventionally. You cannot open up a checking account with the James Baca at whatever bank you deal with and say, hey, it's for my marijuana business. I like Buds LLC or whatever. It is just not going to happen. And they will reject you, tell you it's a restricted business and you cannot open that. And that's paramount all across the banking network. Now, there's a lot of private equity billion-dollar companies who have their paws in the marijuana industry, and with billions of dollars of capital, they're going to be allowed to bank, because let's face it, money talks, right? That's what they used to say in the 80s. But this little small business owner who has a dream of opening up a dispensary and thinks he can make a lot of money off it because he, quote, knows the product, end quote, cannot open up a conventional bank account, which already makes managing money that much harder, because a lot of the higher volume cannabis shops have to have 24-hour security to protect the money, to protect their product. There's a lot of break-ins in these places all across the country, and understandably so. You know, just because marijuana is a legal business now doesn't mean illegal activity will not happen. But as I said, I'm all for it. I'm cool. I have moved on in my life. I don't need to worry about what other people are doing because, hey, right, the stoner said, you know, think about all the taxes you're going to get, you know, tax revenue you're going to get from us, right? Yeah, no, we're not going to get any of that because according to KVIA-TV, the ABC affiliate in El Paso, Texas, Las Cruces, New Mexico, from Sam Harrisimowitz, New Mexico Department of Taxation and Revenue reported that more than 100 cannabis retail businesses have not complied with tax filing rules. The agency explains that some business owners may hold more than one license if they manage multiple businesses. So basically, they're saying they are not following the rules and filing these tax returns every quarter or every 6 months or whatever. And it says the state sent out a news release Wednesday morning saying the Taxation and Revenue Department has been contacting non-compliant license holders since the summer. The department has reached out to retail license holders who have failed to file one or more tax returns since registering with the department. The report releases that 80 of these retailers have complied since the department began reaching out in the past few months. So it mentions more than 100 and 80 of them have complied, which means there's 20 to 30 or so who probably have not. And it says license holders must be in good standing with their taxes in order to renew their licenses. That's the article. That is a small article, but it's an interesting one by Sam because he's basically saying without saying that at least 20 businesses are not complying with filing their taxes, which means that they're either out of business already or they're just deciding not to pay taxes, the very taxes that they mentioned were going to help, you know, fund the schools and pave the roads and whatnot. It's crazy to me. It's crazy because it was a bill of goods that we were sold by these purveyors, the ones that said, hey, do this for the community, and we did it, and they're not paying their fair share. And you know, it's not a political thing here, it's just a, you know, you deal with BSers all the time in banking, and you know when someone is just not telling you the truth or they believe something that you know to be just not only not true but impossibly untrue. So 20 to 30 businesses are not being compliant with their taxes, which means that if they follow through with that non-compliance and they're still operating a business, they are operating a business illegally, which means they are illegally selling drugs at that point because they'll lose their license. So this becomes a bigger issue because, you know, in the last couple of months here in this town, there was one big cannabis dispensary by the name of Sol, spelled S-O-L, like the Spanish word for sun, that had three locations. They had turkey drives last Thanksgiving. They had events for kids, even though kids can't buy cannabis. It was like a big deal. They all had their shirts. They're paying $500 a week for billboards all across this town, and they're out of business now. The business that seemed to have their shit together the most, according to my two eyes, went out of business before a lot of these rinky-dink ones, which is amazing to me. Because, like I said, a lot of the people who overthink this, like, man, if we open up this weed business, we'll call it this, and then this is what we'll do. We'll have a lounge where you can just get high right there. You don't even have to go home. And then we're going to have these bud tenders that are going to talk about the 100 strains that we're going to have. Then we're going to sell, you know, pipes and hookahs and this and that, and we're going to have this, and man, we're going to be just rich off of the one thing that we know the most about. That's cloud talk, man. That's marijuana cloud talk. And I believe that these people want to believe that they can be great business owners in that. But some people are just not cut out to being business owners, pure and simple. Pure and simple, okay? So you see that no one's paying their taxes, and you're like, well, what else are they skimping on? You know, are they not paying their employees on time? Is there a very aggressive customer service interaction with refunds, for instance? Like, if someone gets sold a product that is just inferior or just horribly just not up to standards and up to codes, how do you handle that? How do they handle social media? Because most cannabis businesses can't advertise on conventional social media because that's against policy. So how do you hype up your business? Do you have a street team? Do you have flyers? Do you make business cards? Do you have word of mouth? Or are you just going to put a gigantic marijuana leaf on a sign and say, hey, we're open for business, and you expect people to come in right away? It's not how it works. You know, there has to be a smooth transition from idea to how is this actually going to work. Because it's like what I've told you about before in the years past, you know. There's some food trucks that are perfectly good food trucks that make a lot of money doing what they do best. And then they get the bright idea that this is their start to open up a brick and mortar. But you think about it, it's like, well, now that you have a brick and mortar, you have to pay the water bill. You have to pay for security cameras. You got to pay for this. You got to pay for toilet paper in the bathroom. You don't have a bathroom in a food truck, you know. You have to think about all of these things, and all of a sudden, you're like, well, it sucks. I'm going to have to make more money in order to justify all this expense. And these cannabis shops, you know, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people growing their own supply. But then you have to hire people, and then the minimum wage in this town is that much higher than it is elsewhere, which is still too low, might I add. You had to pay these people. You had to pay insurance on your rental property for your business, security cameras, actual security. You know, maybe you have to invest in a safe to put all of your cash and all of your product in. You know, it's a lot of work and it's a lot of effort. So whenever they say, hey, we're not going to pay our taxes, that way we can catch up on something else, well, the state's not going to play ball that way, and they're going to take away your license. So I'm really skeptical of, I was already skeptical before this news story, but I'm already skeptical of a lot of business owners in the state of New Mexico dealing with cannabis shops, because I don't think they can be entrusted with their own business, much less a bank account. So, you know, this is the Notorious Banker, and we do talk banking in here, so let me get to that as well. I had a customer, a Mexican restaurant, that came out of nowhere and opened from California, opened up this little taco shop, you know, not near the bank, but it was about a mile away. And it was good food, you know, and they were really nice people. I thought the owner, the male owner, was very nice. And the woman that was his wife, or at least he claimed to be his wife, was really cool as well. And, you know, what can I say? They were nice people. I did a lot of business with them, opened up a few accounts, and they were responsible. They had tens of thousands of dollars in the account. I opened up credit card services for them. And I actually opened up a business credit card for them as well. So they really helped me one quarter, and they saved my bacon, saved my ass. And I got a bonus because of those people. Well, a year later, the husband-wife that owned this particular Mexican restaurant, well, let me just get to it. So the wife came in, the quote-unquote wife came in and said, hey, so-and-so, my husband, actually left, so do I have access to the account? And I'm like, well, of course you do. You're a co-owner and your name is on it, so if you need to take money out, you can. But she was saying it so weirdly. I was like, well, why do you ask? You know, because, of course, I know who you are, and I'm able to help you, and that's why we're talking. So she said, that he, the man, the husband, was actually married to another woman, ran away with her. They opened up the restaurant in New Mexico, set up shop, made hundreds of thousands of dollars in 1 year. And then the damnedest thing, he said he was going back to his real wife, his first wife, moves back to California. She's left with an open restaurant and a bank account with tens of thousands of dollars. And she's stunned, you know, she had a bad breakup, her husband's moving on. And she's like, well, what do I do? And I was like, well, do you want the money? And she says, yeah. I'm like, well, take the money out and close the account out. If you're closing down the restaurant, go for it. It's your right. It's your prerogative to do that. You know, it's a joint affair, but you technically weren't married, but you are partners and you have the right to this money in the bank account. If he leaves it and he comes back and complains, well, that's not on me. He gave you the right to get that money out. So she took the money out, and then maybe about a month or so later, I see the guy, the husband, or the fake husband, go and talk to my boss and say, well, she can't take any money out. She can't do this. It's my restaurant, my whatever. And we're like, here's a piece of paper. She's a signer. You're a signer. Nothing we can do. Sorry about that. And that was the end of that. I didn't see him again. He said he was going to sue, but he didn't sue us because he would have lost. So, you know, we didn't get involved in that drama. We just went by the book and said, this is what's happening. This is what we can do. And when he left for his other wife, she was able to get the money out because that's the way that it was. The business was not necessarily a husband and wife business. It was just two random people who were signers on the account. She had the ability to get the money out, and she did, legally. So it just seems with cannabis businesses, with the clientele and the type of people who are proprietors of the cannabis business, it seems to me that banks will have to go through that. I think there will be tons of overdrafts. I think there will be, you know, things that just go wrong with day-to-day spending within those businesses. I think there will be issues where there's going to be very, very, very touch-and-go AML stuff. I think that, you know, one day there's going to be $80,000 deposited into the account, and the next day there's going to be $79,000 taken out. There's going to be $85,000 the next day, and there's going to be $84,500 the next day. And those are volatile swings. Those are volatile things that I really personally think that banks don't want to get involved with. And I know that there are some banks and there are some people within the big banks that says, yes, we need this business because it's more capital, it's more deposits, it's more revenue. And there's some people who are still all for that. But just seeing what my state has gone through in the last year with a lot of shady, and I'm going to say shady business owners, I would say that banks need to take a step back and say, do we really want to get into this business? Forget the whole, you know, federal state thing or whatever. Just the fact that these people are going to cause drama. These people are going to stress us out. They're going to be a burden to us. They're going to require a lot more TLC than the average business customer. And do we want to do that for pennies on the dollar? Because although it is a big industry, it is not one of the biggest industries, you know. So I really think that banks should be thinking twice about wanting this, just based on the experiences here. Now, I can't speak for California, I can't speak for Colorado or any of these other states, but if they're going through similar things, and if there's storefronts that close up shop right away, it's a volatile business, that is a unique, suspicious activity, according to the bank. That is something that would warrant a suspicious transmittal memo. That is something that would warrant extra due diligence whenever you're opening accounts. Like, well, why are these places opening and closing? It seems like a front for something. And that's just the way that bank minds are taught to think. So, as traditional of a banker as I am, because I was trained by a very traditional bank, as open as I am to, you know, these type of businesses trying to thrive, the good ones anyway, I just know that there's a lot of people within the industry that cannot handle a simple 9-to-5 job, much less running a business. I can barely do that, and I'm all in on Notorious Banker, you know what I mean? So I think that banks should be kind of hesitant. let all the federal stuff, all the background stuff work first before you jump headfirst into this, because you might see charge-offs. You might see people owing the bank thousands of dollars in their checking account because when they finally go under, checks bounce, chargebacks happen, all of a sudden you're going to have millions of dollars in just charged-off losses. You're going to have credit cards that might be defaulted. You might have small business loans that may never be paid. You might have all of these things all because you wanted this revenue, this capital, to be able to say instead of $2 trillion of deposits, we've got $2.1 trillion in deposits. Is that extra 0.1 worth it? I don't think that it is right now. So marijuana businesses, you know, like I said, they're here to stay. I don't think it's going to be recriminalized in any of these states. I do think they are going through some growing pains. I am sure every industry that is just created out of thin air goes through those growing pains. But it is very telling that 100 people got sent that letter, because that tells me that they don't even have basic accountants working for them to take care of those tax things, those tax requirements. They're stretching themselves too thin. They're worried about this product that they're consuming as well, that they're not focusing on the behind the scenes. And the behind the scenes is the most part, is the biggest part of it, because if you're not taking care of that, the front of house is just going to be equally as screwed. So, you know, it's weird for me to say that I was wrong and I'm totally flip-flopping on something here, but I have to here, just for the sake of making sure that the correct businesses thrive and succeed and the right way as well. I'm not saying, hey, paying taxes makes you a good citizen. I'm saying, hey, there were some simple basic requirements that the state told you that you had to do in order to continue doing business, and you couldn't even do that. Then how can I trust you operating the storefront? I can't, because it tells me that you're letting the little things slide. When the little things slide, then the medium things slide, and then the big things slide, and then you become a really bad business. And you're just there just to be there at that point. Look, we're not going to be able to put the toothpaste back into the tube here, okay? It's going to be here to stay. The fact of the matter is, do you want private equity? Do you want these corporations with billions of dollars running these businesses? Because they can run them pretty efficiently, and they're going to squeeze out the small-time purveyor just like every other small business out there. Or do you want to give a concerted effort and say, hey, me as an individual, I'm going to trust myself, I'm going to trust my product, I'm going to trust my company, I'm going to pay my taxes, I'm going to do things the right way, I'm going to be a part of the community, and we're going to make money doing the one thing that I love the most? Well, if 100 of those people in the state out of maybe 200-300 purveyors can't even do the most basic thing that an average adult does, then I am very fearful of this industry imploding on itself. And what becomes of it then, I have no clue. So a rare miss by yours truly and a total flip-flop, but I'm okay with it. After we return, I'm going to talk to you about some bank bonuses and what to look out for, so please stick around. All right, I'm back with more Notorious Banker here, wrapping it up. I just wanted to tell you that there's some interesting bank promotions going on, and I am not one to endorse, hey, go to this bank, go to that bank. Unless you're paying me, I don't want to endorse your company. Simple as that, because I've done enough endorsement for a bank that unceremoniously fired me in 2018. But I'm going through some stuff right now. I'm trying to figure out a way to buy a vehicle on the cheap. I'm trying to find a way to buy a vehicle without money, if you can believe that. And there's a lot of things, you know, available to you now in this time of high interest rates. Well, there's also high yields in savings accounts and high yields in bank bonuses. So last year, when I fought and wrote a book about the unemployment process in the state of New Mexico, I finally won my case, and there was almost $13,000 that was headed my way of pandemic unemployment relief. Thank God for that. I would be homeless probably now if it wasn't because of that money. I was like, well, where am I going to open up the account at? I wanted to open it up at a bank that I didn't necessarily bank at normally. I wanted to be at a place where I'd have to go out of my way to get the money, because the only thing that money was for was going to be to pay my mortgage. And that was it. Nothing else at all. So I decided on PNC Bank, because PNC was new to the area. They had a decent account structure for me. They had easy ATM to get to, and then they also had a $400 bonus for depositing 10,000 or more. And I'm like, well, I have 10,000 or more, and this is gonna be one of the only times that I have 10,000 or more for the foreseeable future. Let's go open it at PNC. And I did, and about 30 days later, I got $400. I forgot what I used it for, but I used it for something important in my life. I just don't remember what it is. And I was glad that I did it. And it's been a good bank for me, although I'm looking at other banks now. They've done their job. I did my role in order to do that. I'm going to close my account out. They can't say, hey, it's only been 2 years. What's the deal? I was like, no, I gave you guys 2 years and I just decided to move on. I'm not NerdWallet here, okay? I'm not a website that says I want to help people bank better. Although my name was Bank Better Guy for the longest time, go figure. But you go to their website, and it's a good website, I like it, but everything is a referral. So anytime you click on a link, they're getting some money from you. So they're not really in it to refer you to a bank that you think that they think is the best for you. They're there to make money. They're there to hopefully see you click a button, that way they can get a commission from however their partners give them commission and say, hey, your work allowed this person to click on, I'm just throwing a name out there, SoFi. They opened an account there, they brought $100,000 in. Here's a commission for bringing that business in. It's being a banker without having to sit in a desk and wear a very uncomfortable suit for 8 hours a day. So I'm not a big fan of NerdWallet because it's one thing to give good financial advice, but it's another thing to give good financial advice with you getting a kickback on the back end. I'm getting no kickbacks for these as well. So as I mentioned a while ago, I wanted to buy a car on the cheap. I am figuring out through couponing, cashback apps, doing surveys through swag books and whatnot. Slowly but surely, I'm getting to a number where I'm able to have a decent amount down to purchase a truck. And one of the things I'm gonna do, and one of the things my wife has done is opened up a Capital One account. They gave me $150 10 years ago for opening up a bank account there, which was a lot at the time. I used that to go to Vegas with, if you could believe that. 10 years later, they're giving $350, and my wife, who has long since talked about opening up a Capital One account, finally is about to get paid $350. That will be towards our vehicle. And I'm like, let's not stop there. We have enough capital to move stuff around, so. I was looking at Axos Bank. Axos Bank is a fintech. They're offering a $300 credit with direct deposit. Even Chase, some of the bigger banks, $200 with requirements for direct deposit. Bank of America is offering $200 with direct deposit options as well, but I'm not eligible for that ever again. But the one that I'm settling on after my wife is going to Capital One is BMO, formerly Bank of the West here in New Mexico. BMO is Bank of Montreal. They weren't in America for the longest time, and then they started working their way in the central US. Ended up in Arizona a few years back. One of my friends worked there for a while, and they are here now in New Mexico. So BMO is offering $400 to open up an account if you deposit $4,000 in your account via direct deposit. As far as I know, a Capital One ACH push into a BMO counts as a direct deposit, which is what I can do. So I'm going to get another $400 there. And I believe my wife is going to do the same once she sees mine go through. So, folks, we're going to make $1,150 on bank bonuses, coupled with about $500 I have from surveys, about $300 I have from Ibotta and other cashback apps, selling my car for $700 and selling things around the house on Facebook Marketplace, $100 at a time here and there. We're getting to about $4,000 or $5,000, and we're gonna buy a nice used truck with that. And it's all gonna be through bonuses and hard work aside from income. And I think it's really important that you need to know that. I'm gonna write that in a future book about what I've done in order to achieve this, if I could achieve it. I'm still working on it as we speak. But, the fact of the matter is this: banks are willing to give you money to give them a try. Look at the terms and conditions, see how long you have to stay there, if there's any penalty for withdrawing early. Most places will want you there for 180 days, so take a look at that. If you need to park your money there for 6 months, we'll keep that in mind too. If you're able to move money freely, and as long as you do a direct deposit, as long as you do what's required of you and nothing else, then take advantage of it. Yes, there are some banks that do hard credit pulls, and there's some banks that do soft credit pulls. And I couldn't tell you which ones do which, although I do know Chase used to do a hard pull once upon a time. But I will tell you this. Take a look out there. Just type in bank bonuses on Google, and you will see. You will see a lot of offers available to you. And you'll see the ability to just make a quick buck. Whether or not you need the money like I do, it's going to be there for you. Use it for a vacation fund. Use it to buy yourself something nice. Buy a TV with it, for God's sakes. But banks are in the business of trying to get your business, and they are giving you a decent amount of money to give them a shot. So like I said, I am not endorsing any banks here whatsoever, but I am saying take a look around. There's pop-up ads that show up online all the time, and they're telling you, hey, you can make money if you give us a try. Everyone has online banking. Everyone knows how to move money around through Zelle and ACH. It is not as difficult a thing as it was in the 2010s whenever I was still at Bank of America. So look at it from afar and say, hey, am I happy with my bank? And if I'm not happy with my bank and I do want to make a switch, or I want a secondary account, find a bank that's willing to give you a very generous introductory offer. Because, you know, that old saying that old people use whenever they yell at bankers, and I was like, oh, you guys make money off of my money. Well, yes, that is what we do. We are a business. You know, it's like that same person going to the grocery store saying, oh, you guys are making money, me paying $5 for ham when it's $3. Yes, that is exactly what we do. Thank you for clarifying that, sir. So I'm all for giving banks a shot, giving them a shot, seeing how they work for you. And if they don't work, then move on. But make sure if there is a bonus attached to the check, the terms and conditions. Some places will let you leave after 60 days. Some places will let you leave right away. Or some places will let you leave after 6 months. But if they're willing to give you an incentive for parking your money there, knowing that a lot of people have bank accounts that aren't even paying them 1% in these crazy times with high interest, then I would say give them a shot, because you're doing yourself a disservice. And I always tell people this, even when they're happily banking at a Wells Fargo or Bank of America. I'm not saying that these banks are bad. You know, everyone's experiences are different. Don't go by what I say. Go by how you feel. If you feel comfortable at that place and everything is fine and dandy and you couldn't see yourself anywhere else, well, then so be it. But if you just go to the bank there and you hate them all, and you don't like the service, you don't like the products that they have, why do you stick around, even if it's just for convenience purposes, like a lot of my customers tell me? Every bank is convenient. Even the smaller banks have online banking and Zelle now. And I am no Zelle proponent, but there is methods of moving money around almost instantaneously if you need that. So don't sell yourself short. In fact, get a little money while you're not selling yourself short, and take a look at some of these bank bonuses. All right, my friends, I'm going to wrap it up now. It's been a long podcast, longer than I thought. I just want to thank you so very much for listening to this podcast. My name is James Baca, known professionally as the Notorious Banker. Tens of thousands of followers. You can find me on social media platforms, TikTok, Instagram, and X, formerly known as Twitter, at Notorious Banker. I am the author of Pretty Condo, a book about my grandfather. Available in paperback, ebook, and digital download format on November 13th of this year for as low as $15, with all proceeds going to help benefit my grandmother and her cost of living and her living expenses going forward. And of course, I am the author of Ryan Coogler Bank of America Incident, also known as High Risk Transaction, available on Amazon as well. I will be back with another podcast really, really soon, or as breaking news warrants, but I really appreciate you listening to this one. You got to see something rare from me. You got to hear me flip-flop on a topic I felt so passionately about even just 1 year ago. But there was obviously a good reason for that. Until we meet again, my friends, my name is James Baca, known professionally as the Notorious Banker, signing off. Thank you so very much for listening to my podcast, and you have yourself a great day. Goodbye.